So, good afternoon for those of you who are local. And so, good afternoon for those of you who are local. Greetings for those of you who are far away. And can I have a thumbs up that you can hear me? Great. And it's kind of nice for me to sit here, the way it's looking at the screen. Behind me here is the IMC Buddha. But just to the left of the IMC Buddha is the IRC Meditation Hall Buddha. There's kind of like, you know, I don't see them together ever. So here they are accompanying each other over my left shoulder. Both Buddhas, kind of, feels like. So, the topic for today is clear comprehension of domain. So this commentarial idea is that there are four areas of clear comprehension. And these are a little bit more conceptual, a little more, involve more intelligence or than the raw basic comprehension of just recognition. But they speak to the fact that our life exists in different domains, different areas. And depending on the domain that we're in, we engage with different pieces of wisdom. If you are, if I'm out there driving the road, the domain of the road has wisdom about what traffic lights are about, and they have certain rules you follow. You know you're in the domain. And if you're in the domain of the roads in England, if that's your area, you have to be wise in different ways about driving than if you're in the United States. And so to know what domain you're in, if you're a guest in someone's house, that to know you're that, you probably would behave a little bit differently than if you're the host in a house and have guests. And so there's a little bit different ways you want to live and address your life. If you go to a birthday party for a little kid, you probably behave differently than if you go to a birthday party for someone of some august age, maybe. Or if you go to a funeral, there's a domain, an area, and you'd behave differently there. And in terms of our own practice, when we kind of step back and look at our practice over a long period of time, like what's the intention over the next year in my practice, that's a little bit more conceptual involved kind of wisdom than asking the question, what's the wise way to be mindful of right now? Or how should I be with this breathing, this moment? Or how should I look at my relationship to the experience? You know, in a very simply, very direct, in the immediacy now, as opposed to, you know, this bigger picture. So these four clear comprehensions kind of cover a range of different domains. And in fact, one of the clear comprehensions is called domain. And so we have to kind of understand where you're at, the situation you're in, the context you're in, and what is needed for that context and what's appropriate for the context. For many of us, or all of us here, there was a context and a time where it made sense to think about this retreat, plan for the retreat, and I guess this retreat, maybe you didn't pack for it, but still, you had your things you had to get ready to set up to get to be here. Once you're on the retreat, the context has changed, and now you're no longer thinking about what to pack for the retreat, or what, how to get there, or planning for it. Now you're just there with your breath, maybe, and the domain that's appropriate is much simpler and simpler. And as the mind gets stiller and stiller, the domain, the context for practice, takes a different shape, and we practice differently if the mind is wildly out of control and full of fantasies, or we're filled with grief over something and tremendous amount of fear. That's a different context for the practice than the context if the mind is really still and quiet and the external world kind of disappears from attention and even the body starts to disappear. And that's a different context for how to practice and what is wise to do. So the wisdom factor is different, looks different, depending on the domain and the context of what's happening in our practice. So the word, so there's this idea of clear comprehension of domain. In the suttas, the Buddha talks about being skilled in the domain, being skillful about the domain, the context that you're in. Now the word domain, that's the word that that generally I received from when people talk about the four clear comprehensions, is the Pali word gochara. And gochara, the word go is a Pali word for cow. I love it that these Indo-European languages are all connected. And some things are so important for societies that their words hardly change over as these languages travel to different cultures. So cow, in Norwegian it's ku, in English it's cow, in Pali it's go. Another word that has travels well over the centuries and millennia is soup. In Pali, or soup is suppa, something like that, almost like Italian, at least in my pronunciation. So this is, this wonderful kind of connectivity of these languages and this Indo-European family that many of us share or speak English. So the word is gochara, and chara means to walk or to wander or to travel. It's the wandering place for cows. Is the literal meaning. And if you've been around cows, I don't know how much you've been around cows. I worked on a dairy farm for a while. Spent a lot of time with cows. When cows wander around, they graze. Cows are grazing all the time. And so one of the meanings of gochara is a pasture. It's a pasture where the cows go to graze. It's also, by extension, means any place an animal goes to get its food. Different animals, the Buddha says, have their gochara, their pasture, in different locations. It's the food place for different animals. And so this idea that this domain, gochara, pasture, means both a location and a place where we get nourished, where we get fed, where we graze. It has kind of both meanings in it. And we see that in early Buddhism, they play a lot with the metaphor, the associations, analogies of location and food and nourishment and eating and drinking in relationship to practice. Location is very important. To be rooted in the place you're in, to be grounded, to stand where you are, to sit where you are. And then to be nourished by that, somehow be fed and sustained by that. We see this idea in this wonderful word, bodhimanda. Manda is like mandala almost. Bodhimanda. The bodhimanda is the seat of enlightenment. It's the place on the ground under the bodhi tree where the Buddha was awakened. But manda also means the cream of the milk. The very best part of the milk is manda. The very best place to sit is on the seat of awakening. The location and this thing, that wonderful thing we can drink of cream, again, we see this coming together of nourishment and location. And I wanted to mention the bodhimanda because there's a tradition in Buddhism for you to consider that any place you sit to meditate, any place you go to do your walking meditation, is your bodhimanda, is your seat of awakening, your place of awakening. It's the best place, the cream of places for you to sit. And not to sit down kind of incidentally, casually, kind of like the place where you sit that doesn't matter after all, you're closing your eyes, and who cares about the place? But to sit grounded and really make contact, be here. Beautiful, at least for me, inspiring teachings that have to do with place is the Buddha tells a story or an analogy, and he talks about a jungle where monkeys live. And there's a particular area, apparently in the foothills of the Himalayas, where it's not too easy for hunters to come in, but it's pretty nice for monkeys to live. If the monkeys go up the mountain from this nice jungle area, where it's steep cliffs, it becomes dangerous for the monkeys, and they can fall and get hurt. If they instead leave the jungles in the foothills and go out into the plains where people live, then the hunters can catch them. But if the monkeys stay in their home territory, then they're safe. And he calls the home territory their ancestral homeland. Then he says, in the same way, bhikkhus, same way, practitioners, if you stay in your ancestral homeland, you'll be safe. If you wander off into urban areas where there's lots of temptations of all kinds and dangers, you might get caught by something. And I do know that there's not so far from probably where most of you live, the modern day hunters have planted lots of traps. They like billboards, storefronts with beautiful things for sale, all this stuff to be had. And some of you even invited the traps into your homes. And you use the screen you're using now for the Dharma is the very screen which you invite in the traps. And some of you get caught in those traps. Some wonderful commercial advertisement comes up and that's what I want. But if you go into the wilderness, too high up where it's dangerous cliffs and try to scale these rocky cliffs and without any ropes or anything, you might fall. And the wilderness of your mind, you know, there are times occasionally that maybe some of us, our minds maybe get a little bit out there, a little bit, you know, into the wilderness of maybe just a few of you, you know, or maybe just me, where I get a little bit crazy in there. It's a little bit, you know, the wilderness. But if you could stay in your ancestral homeland, you'll be safe. So then the question is, what is your ancestral homeland? It's the four foundations of mindfulness. So here the mindfulness practice is considered the same as or an analogy of as a place, a location. That this is a location for practice. And one of the first foundation is the body. Your body is a location. Even more so than the seat you're sitting on, your body is the bodhimanda, is the place of awakening. I can guarantee you that you will not become awakened in any other location than where your body is. That's where it's going to be. If your practice is going to mature and grow and develop, if you want to find out and see it grow, if you want to notice where it's all happening, it's going to happen here with this body that you have. So to be rooted and grounded in this body, to be rooted and grounded in the feeling tones, the sense of pleasant and unpleasant. And rooted and grounded means that you clearly see the feeling tones of pleasant, unpleasant, and neither. But you have the ability to be wise about that. Wise comprehension of domain, wise comprehension of how to be present for pleasant things, unpleasant experience, things that are neither pleasant or unpleasant, And particularly with mindfulness, what's wise, the context of mindfulness practice, is to see pleasant as pleasant. And try not to get caught up in the wanting and the craving for pleasant, just to see it. To see unpleasant as unpleasant. And try not to be caught up in resisting or pushing away or being angry at the unpleasant. To just simply allow us to see us, see it, and remain in our seat, remain rooted, pleasant and unpleasant. Or it can be wise to take in the nourishment of the pleasant. To take in, it's a part of the pasture. There is a particular way where we can, I think Andre spoke very nicely about opening up, this kind of the diffuse awareness you talked about yesterday. There's a way with taking in the diffuse rather than kind of getting tight and narrow in the specific that sometimes allows some opening of pleasant feelings of presence, of openness, of contentment, of ease, and to allow ourselves to be nourished by the good feelings of practice. Not to hold on to it, not to cling to it, but allow it to be nourishing. And in my kind of vocabulary, being nourished is very different than eating and drinking. That's eating and drinking is a little bit more active, but being nourished is like after the food has gone in, I kind of allow it to nourish me, to be digested and spread with my blood all over, nourishment throughout my body. This idea that there's something we're opening and allowing the pleasant feelings of practice to support us to be more open, more relaxed, more receptive, more allowing. This is good to be allowing for. And then the third foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of the mind. And I find it fascinating that this mindfulness of the mind, the way it's described in the four foundations of mindfulness, is divided into two halves. And the first half has to do with being mindful of the mind with greed, with hatred, and with delusion. It's clearly the word with is there because it's a compound word in Pali with the with is kind of a prefix to greed, hate, and delusion. And this is fascinating because it's not that the mind is greedy, hateful, and deluded. If the mindfulness is strong, it's always going to see it that only part of the mind has greed, hate, and delusion in it. It doesn't define the mind, because as long as this mindfulness is clear, part of the mind is not caught. Part of the mind sees it and holds it and is present for it. But then in the second half of the list in the third foundation of mindfulness, then it talks about the mind as it is. The mind becomes expansive. The mind becomes concentrated. The mind becomes liberated. Then the whole mind is characterized by these things. And with that, it's possible to be aware, to be mindful of the mind liberated, and somehow the mindfulness itself is part and parcel of that liberation. It's part and parcel of that expansive, open mind. So it's fascinating that on one hand, certain things, the unwholesome things, are seen as somehow something we're free of, the more mindful we are. But the nice states of mind that arise in practice become more integrated as part of awareness, part of the mindfulness. And then the fourth foundation of mindfulness is to be aware, the essence of it is to be aware of those movements of the mind to cling, to grab, to get involved and entangled with experience, and those movements of mind that sets it free. So, and you can actually feel and watch and become skilled at noticing this very simple movement of going towards to have and to grab and pulling away and having aversion and having, you know, ill will or not wanting, resisting. There's movements in which the mind, the heart, become contracted, become narrower, become more dense, more difficult to penetrate and see and understand, versus the movements of the mind that open up. It's like the fists of the mind. You can feel physically how the fists of the mind tighten or open up. And so the fourth foundation of mindfulness is to begin tuning into how, in these different areas of our life, this movement of the mind getting caught and becoming free operate, and the influence it has on us. So to have this as the clear comprehension of domain for a practitioner, the Buddha said, is the four foundations of mindfulness. The pasture for practitioners is the four foundations of mindfulness. What this implies is that other places you can go to feed maybe are not the proper pasture, maybe they're not the proper nourishment. So sometimes we see, there's a bag of corn chips in the kitchen. And the next thing we know, the bag is finished. Have you been nourished? What happened there was your pasture, your senses, your awareness, your attention, your interest, all went to feed at a pasture outside of yourself, the pasture of the chips. And if you're not even aware that you're eating until you finish the bag, then you really kind of lost your mindfulness. To keep your pasture be the four foundations of mindfulness, one would notice, oh, I'm seeing a bag of chips. There's seeing happening. And as I see it, I feel the body contract and lean in the direction of the chips. And you'd feel and ground yourself in that sensations of leaning. You'd notice the pleasant sensations that come up in relationship to that bag of chips. And you would ground yourself in that presence, that pleasant situation. Really feel it and be with it. And not let the attention slip off the body, slip off the feelings, and get lost in the object of the chips. One would be grounded in the mind states. What are the mind states now that I want this chips? Sure enough, there's some kind of strong wanting. I'm not going to admit it being greed, because that's not who I am, but it is compulsive. It's so strong that it's like, look, I'm going to lose myself. I just want to dive into the bag. And so the mind state has a particular flavor. So we ground ourselves in that mind state. Really know it. Feel it. That's the pasture, to really recognize that. And not to lose that pasture, not to lose that sense of your ancestral homeland, which is the attention, the mindfulness of these mind states. If you slip off that attention to the mind states and your pasture becomes the chips, then soon you might have gorged. And then also the pasture is to notice the clinging or the release of clinging that exists in relationship to those chips. So what I'm trying to do with these examples is to indicate how for a practitioner, if what you want to do is practice, this is not a moral imperative. If what you want to do is to do mindfulness practice, if what you want to do is be in a practice that leads to liberation, then you want to be nourished and you want to be rooted, grounded in a particular domain, a particular pasture. The pasture of your body, the pasture of feeling tones, the pasture of mind states, and the pastures of dhammas. But it's more nuanced than that, because it's not the body in and of itself, feeling tones in and of themselves, mind states in and of themselves, dhammas in and of themselves. Specifically what it is the awareness of the body, the awareness of feeling tones, the awareness of mental states, and the awareness of these dhammas, this patterns of the mind of getting caught and becoming free. It's when we're aware that something special happens, when we live in that awareness of these things, of these pastures, that it's the awareness of these things which is really the pasture. So it isn't like we're going to lick, you know, and drink these parts of the body, these things, but rather it's to notice that by really staying grounded and aware of them, this brings wholesomeness to us. This brings goodness. Where is that goodness? Where is that wholeness? Where is that sense of being nourished? By being grounded and centered here. At first, it's just an act of trust that that's valuable to do. Enough trust that you're willing to suspend the belief and the authority that where it's really at is in the chips. And if you believe chips are where it's at, that's what's going to do it for you, then maybe they are. I like chips myself. That's why I'm talking about them. But the idea that that's not where the nourishment and the support and the grounding of practice is going to be found. And so we have to decide this clear comprehension of purpose. What is your purpose? What did you set yourself up to do? What are you really trying to do here in your practice? Eat chips in a better way? Or stay grounded, stay centered, and to find the nourishment that it exists within and being settled and present. So the four foundations of awareness, of mindfulness, are the pasture and the ancestral homeland of yourself. It's your place. In this relationship to this, there's some interesting teachings the Buddha gives. In his he talks about the five senses: seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, and touching, as having their domain, their pasture, are the objects, the sense objects. So, you know, the objects of sight are the domain. It's what eyes take in, what they see. That's where they roam in. The wandering area for eyes is the world around us. The place where they pasture that the ears roam around in a sense, is the sounds around us and so forth. And he talks about that's the domain, that's the pasture, that's the realm of the senses. And then someone asks the Buddha, what is the refuge? And what's the domain? What's the pasture of the mind? The pasture of the mind is knowing what's going on in the senses. And then he also asks, what's the refuge for the senses? The sense, ability to sense things in the world. The refuge for the senses is the mind. So there's something very special about the mind. The mind ties it all together. The mind is aware of the different senses, but the different senses don't know the pasture of each other. The ears don't see what the eyes see, and the eyes don't hear what the ears hear. Each of the senses has a different domain, but the mind is a central clearinghouse where all this information comes, and the mind is the refuge and support for all these senses. And the senses are part of the domain of the mind. So anyway, this is what kind of the teachings are. Then someone asks the Buddha, and what is the refuge for the mind. And the Buddha says, awareness, sati, mindfulness, that the refuge, sarana, for the mind is mindfulness. Whatever the mind is, if you want to protect it and shelter it, support it, give it a refuge, give it a pasture, find its ancestral homeland, it's mindfulness. Mindfulness is so important. You can never have too much mindfulness of a clear awareness. And then the Buddha was asked, well, what's the refuge for mindfulness? And the Buddha said, liberation. And liberation maybe is a big word, but letting go, not being contracted, not clinging, not grasping. If you want to support and create nourishment or create a domain, a pasture for mindfulness itself, or a refuge for it, it's the experience of the mind not clinging to anything. That's where mindfulness becomes safe. And we can sense that in these teachings of allowing, receiving, relaxing. These are all movements of liberation, movements of non-clinging. And that's the refuge for our awareness. Awareness begins to grow or expand or fill out. The less there is clinging and the more there is space for it to grow. Then the person asks the Buddha, what's the refuge for liberation? And the Buddha says, Nibbana. Nibbana is the refuge. So letting go fully, it is letting go also someplace has a refuge. And it's Nibbana. And that's a whole topic in itself, what that is, or how to relate to it. But and then the Buddha, the person says, well, what's the refuge for Nibbana? And the Buddha says, now you're asking beyond what's proper to answer. And so that's it, left it there. So this idea that in mindfulness is a location, is where this place where we stand, the ground, the location here. In this regard, the most common etymological explanation for the Pali word for happy, the word happy is sukha, sukha. And the most common explanation is that the ka part means to stand, and the su, the prefix, means well or good or wonderful. To stand well, this is happiness. To be able, again, here we go again with this standing, this being rooted, this being grounded in a place here. The Zen teacher Suzuki Roshi was asked something about how he practices. He's a great Zen master, so that's always interesting to know. And he said, when I'm standing, I know the sensations of I know my feet are on the ground. When I'm sitting, I know my butt is on my pillow, my cushion. So, you know, I suppose either that was not very profound answer, or it was an extremely profound answer. To be grounded and rooted in the place you're at, here. So I want to give one more teaching around this idea of clear comprehension of domain and being rooted here in your domain. Being able to recognize what is the right domain, what is the location you're in, what's the context you're in, and what's the wise way to be here. And it's always wise to be mindful. And on retreat in particular, it's, you know, it's really, really the place for mindfulness are these four foundations of mindfulness. Maybe different ones at different times. So the Buddha gives this story, this analogy, of six animals. And these six animals, a person catches six animals. They are a snake, a crocodile, a bird, a dog, a jackal, and a monkey. And the sutta says, each of these animals has a different pasture, a different domain, different feeding ground. Sometimes this word gochara is translated as feeding ground. And so this person then takes and ties them all together with rope, so they're bound together. But since they have to eat, and they all have different eating grounds, they are tugging against each other in different directions. They're at odds with each other, and they're all pulling in different directions. And because they're tied together, maybe they don't go anywhere for a while, just a big struggle, until five of them get tired. And the one that's no longer tired wins and pulls everyone along to that animal's feeding ground. So this analogy of this, what this is an analogy of, are the six senses: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind sense they can see there. And if and the Buddha says, so too, a practitioner who has not developed mindfulness directed to the body, mindfulness centered on the body, the eyes pull in the direction of agreeable objects and pulls away from those which are unpleasant. The ear pulls in the direction of pleasant sounds and away from those which are unpleasant. The nose pulls in the direction of odors, pleasant and unpleasant odors. So each sense goes off, each of these five senses goes off in a different direction. And however, for a practitioner, when a practitioner dwells, having established mindfulness of the body with a measureless mind, then the practitioner isn't pulled by all the senses. In other words, the practitioner is free. The senses can operate, but we're not pulled towards the chips. We're not preoccupied. We don't get caught up in thoughts and ideas about chips and what chips will do, and Gil should stop talking about chips. And but this idea, he dwells in the mindfulness of the body with a measureless mind. So I'll come back to that before I'm going to finish this thing here. Then gives a slightly different analogy. If the person catches six animals and ties them all together to a same pillar, some big, strong pillar dug deep into the ground, then they can pull all they want, but none of the animals will win and pull all the other animals along. And eventually, they'll just quiet down and go to sleep near the pillar. This is what the story says. And then the Buddha says, in this analogy, the strong post or pillar for the senses is a designation for mindfulness centered on the body. Therefore, practitioners, you should train yourself this way. We will develop and cultivate mindfulness centered on the body, make it our vehicle, make it our basis, stabilize it, exercise ourselves in it, and fully perfect it. Thus should you train yourself. One dwells setting up mindfulness of the body. So we're again, this location, this being rooted, this pillar is really rooted in a location centered here. To really kind of embody yourself. You count. Who you are is important. Be yourself. Embody yourself. Sit fully present and connected. Be rooted in this body. And then the Buddha says, so he says, be centered on the body, mindful of the body, with a measureless mind. The word here, it's, this translation is measureless. It's also boundless mind, mind that has no boundaries. An awareness which is open and expansive. And this combination of having a rooted in your place, that this place where you are is your pasture, is your domain. Really be here. When you stand, know you're standing. When you're sitting, know you're sitting. When you're lying down, know you're lying down. When you're walking, know you're walking. Know it in an embodied way. Know and experience, allow yourself to experience the physicality, the ballast, the rootedness, the presence of really being here that you can't be if you're spinning and caught up in thoughts and fantasies and past and future. The four domains, the four foundations of mindfulness are not found by fantasizing. They're found here, beginning with the body. Feeling tones, mind states, the dhammas, here, always here. This word here, such an important one in the Dharma. Here, grounded, settled, centered, here. Waking up here. And then with a boundless mind, with a mind that knows how to can smell or feel or sense that movement towards freedom, movements for letting go and not being contracted, that moves in the direction of freedom. Be open, relaxed, receptive, allowing. And for you to be clearly willing to take, clearly willing to return and live in your ancestral homeland that's here. What a great thing. Here is where you'll be safe. So clear comprehension of domain. May you be nourished by it. So thank you very much. And it is the Vesak, the day that in the night celebrating when the Buddha sat on his Bodhi Manda and was awakened. May you on this evening, after it's gotten dark, even if it's just for 5 minutes, maybe you'll sit with confidence and clarity on your Bodhi Manda. Thank you.